Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Dory, the communications manager here at the Denver Audubon. We're an independent, nonprofit chapter of the National Audubon Society, and we believe that birds are not just beautiful, they're vital. They're messengers of ecosystem health, and when we protect them, we also nurture the well-being of our communities, the environment, and the planet. This podcast, The Curious Bird, is part of a larger effort to uplift what we call a voice of the sky, a growing community of people like you who feel called to speak up, act boldly, and care deeply for the future of Earth and all her wild beings. Our goal is to share the stories of inspired advocates and to reflect on the creativity, interconnectedness, and wonder that the natural world awakens in us. We hope these stories spark lifelong learning, deepen your sense of stewardship, and remind us all of the power of collective care. So, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, thank you. We're so glad you're here. Let's take flight together and dive into today's episode of The Curious Bird. I could not be more excited for the episode today. I have with me Devin Jaffe, the founder of Nature's Educators, and sitting on her shoulder is Zelda. So, Devin, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And could you tell us a little bit about Zelda that we have with us?
Yeah, this is Zelda. She says hello. Zelda was a 2015 patch. So she's still very young in her years. She's called a red-front macaw or red-fronted macaw. These birds are a critically endangered species, unfortunately. Not very many of them left due to poaching in agricultural areas. They are unique in the parrot world, or macaw world, I should say. Typically, when we think of macaws, of course, we think of them living in a rainforest. High humidity, lots of plants, lots of moisture, things like that. This particular species lives in the desert region of Bolivia. That's it. So she has adapted to live in deserts and exist in a very hot, dry environment, which is perfect for Canyon City, Colorado.
We are hot
and dry, as we know, with our hands right now. So yeah, she loves doing videos, and she's done a couple of interviews and things, so I'm sure she'll be a total ham the entire time.
Oh, she's already a star. And for those of you who aren't watching the video, she is this brilliant green with red, orange on her forehead. And then when she spreads her wings, she's also got this red and orange plumage that just looks like flames. She's magical. And so a little bit of backstory about how I met Devin was just back in December. We did an event called Coffee with a Corvid. And so it was right after I started, and I was like, I work at a job where we have an event called Coffee with a Corvid. And so drive to the Nature Center and walk in, and there's Devin with Zazu, the African crow, correct?
African pied crow.
And got to see Zazu and Devin's just exuberant, enthusiastic personalities. And I was like, I just have to know more. I have to have a conversation with this incredible human who has this wonderful relationship with birds. And there's so many more than just Zazu. Yes. Devin invited me to come meet all her 48 birds of prey and raptors that are here. And it's just been a wonderful day. And we'll get a little bit more into what the experience of today has been like. But first, I'm going to read Devin Jaffe's bio. And it is just her bio alone is inspiring. So here we go. Devin Jaffe graduated with a BA from Hastings College, Nebraska, after starting the wildlife management program for the school. After interning for 4 years in raptor education and rehabilitation, she acquired her own state and federal licensing her senior year in college and founded Nature's Educators. Now the largest wildlife education outreach program in Colorado, the organization gives an average of 1,300 presentations annually all over the nation. She is also a licensed master falconer and a licensed raptor propagator. She's the owner of Mile High Falcons and is the current president of the High Plains Falconry Club. When she's not working with birds, she and her husband, Evan, love to travel and try new foods. They also enjoy spoiling their yellow lab, Dash. And Dash is adorable. I got to meet him today, too, and I feel very fortunate.
Super spoiled.
Yes, and so well-loved. So, Devin, I would love to have you walk us through. It's 2008, you and two raptors, a red-tailed hawk, a great horned owl. What was your inspiration for the inception of Nature as Educators?
Good question. Kind of weird. I'm a nerd. We have to remember this, right? So growing up, I really, really wanted to be a paleontologist super bad. I'm also really into dinosaurs. And I was allowed to do an internship with a paleontologist. And I went into it expecting like Jurassic Park, right? Like, ooh, like music and cool pith helmets. And we're going to dress up like we're on safari and go out. And it was not that, right? The paleontologist that was there said, you know, you should look at working with dinosaurs of today, which are birds. I'm like, oh, amazing. I was a 4-H kid as well, which I'm very grateful for. And I went through the wildlife program in 4-H. And level 6 of the 4-H wildlife unit is to choose a songbird and a raptor to study for a year and then present on at the fair. So I chose the Steller's Jay and the Prairie Falcon, which are now, you know, two of my favorite birds. Don't worry, I love red from the clouds as well. She's like, hey.
Excuse me.
So my project got grand champion. I went to state champion there. And my parents took me to the Raptor Center over in Pueblo to see the birds that they had on display. And I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. So cool.
Yeah.
So I signed up for internships when I was in college with the Pueblo Raptor Center when I was home on break. And then Raptor Recovery Nebraska, which is now Raptor Conservation Alliance, which is one of our partners. Betsy Finch over there in Nebraska, amazing wildlife rehabber. So studied under both of them for 4 years. And Betsy said, hey, did you know that you could get your own raptor education license? I went through the rehab training. All the hours and everything I did for that, I qualify for a rehab license, but just not my thing.
Yeah.
But I had no idea that you could do just the education side and provide a home for human-raised birds and birds that aren't releasable back to the wild. So that was like mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So Betsy helped me get my state and federal licensing my senior year. I got my permits and started doing education programs, outreach from there, and then it exploded.
Yeah.
Yes, but not without help. I've had some incredible help growing this program. I'm grateful to my parents because they let me keep a hawk and an owl in their backyard before I moved up to Denver area. So they are extremely supportive. So I have very, very supportive family members and a husband that understands that people that run programs like this are, you know, very busy. I mean, it's 7 days a week, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We're busy and I've got birds in the house.
Yeah.
Too, right? So very supportive husband and incredible volunteers that I've had over the years that have helped build this program up, going out and doing programs with us, helping build the facilities, helping care for the birds. So it wasn't just me. No, we had a big team of people and, of course, incredible birds.
Yeah, definitely. So. It takes a village, as they say.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that village extends beyond humanity and into animals and our interconnectedness with the planet. And you can see that by this lovely bird sitting on your shoulder right now.
Yes.
If you hear this little like in the background, that is our Zelda.
Yes. This is fun.
Yeah, it's lovely. So I want to bring back something that you mentioned, which was human raised and non-releasable birds. And if you could tell us a little bit about that, expand upon that, and where the birds that you have here come from and why they're here.
Yes, absolutely. So to start with, sometimes people get a little squidgy when we say, you know, we have birds that, you know, are not going back to the wild, right? Birds that were human raised. They think, oh, we don't want, you know, animals shouldn't be in captivity. Notice we don't use the word captivity. We say in human care, because captivity gives this whole idea of that you're in like jail or something, you know, oh, you're ever, it's terrible. But I mean, you just toured our facilities. We have gorgeous facilities. Our birds are very happy, very well cared for. Our birds have come from all over the place.
Many of them come from our partners, of course, Nebraska Raptor Conservation Alliance. We just picked up that new bald eagle juvenile imprint from them, which we don't even know yet. It's boy or girl, so no need. We just call them newbie eagle. But as you saw, I mean, man, that bird's already adjusted really well here.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's a bird that, you know, was actually found in a warehouse, emaciated, couldn't get out, was picked up, taken into the rehab facility to be fed up, was put in with adults, but had nothing to do with them. But was released, made three big loops, and was like, eh, I don't want to live out here in the wild. This is cool. I'm going to hang out with people. Flew right back.
Yeah.
So we consider that a human imprint. So associating with people rather than with their own kind. So we have birds like that. We have a lot of birds that are partial amputees, you know, missing part of a wing. We have birds that are blind in one eye. We've got birds with crooked legs that maybe can't make the gripping power that they need to be able to kill prey anymore. And so it's our job to be able to give those birds a happy, healthy home and then hopefully be able to train them to go out and do education programs with them. Mm-hmm. We also have a lot of birds that have come from retired from, you know, falconry or from abatements or from breeding programs where they need a place to go hang out and stay. We offer, we're like a retirement home, right, for birds. So we've got some very elderly friends. Mm-hmm. Have you seen? We have a lot of senior citizens here that get to hang out and be what we call perch potato. They just get to sit and eat and do whatever they want all day. They can go out and fly in the yards and hang out. We take them out on the glove and do programs like that. Mm-hmm. We have birds that we have purchased from breeding projects. I also am a licensed breeder, so I breed birds for other educators, other falconers, and other breeders. Mm-hmm. Without breeding programs, human-raised birds, without programs like that, a lot of birds wouldn't exist today. Mm-hmm. And three of them I always like to bring, you know, to people's attention are California condor, mm-hmm. the peregrine falcon, and the bald eagle. It's thanks to falconers and propagators that those birds are still here today. It was the falconers that started the peregrine fund and went out and brought in wild condors, bald eagles, peregrine falcons, and raised them in human care and released them back to the wild. Thanks to programs like that, mm-hmm. both the bald eagle and the peregrine falcon have been removed from the endangered species list and the threatened species list.
Yeah,
condor, the struggle is real. Still, right?
We're working on it.
Working on it. Mm-hmm. But peregrine and bald, great. Mm-hmm. So we have birds from all over the place. We have had birds that have been imported in from other continents. We have other, you know, countries, things like that. We have a bird from Scotland mm-hmm. here right now, which is super exciting. We've had birds from all over the UK. We've had birds that have come from Africa and then imported here into the US. So mm-hmm. we've got birds literally from all over the world, which is pretty fascinating, and different species that you can see all over the world too. Mm-hmm. As well as working with the native species that we see right here in Colorado, we have birds like Zelda here from Bolivia. It's not just that we're going to learn about only birds in Colorado. There are birds that need help everywhere. Mm-hmm. So
it's a wonderful facility, and I so enjoyed your time and the tour. Thank you. The birds are all so well loved, and there is such a special connection you can see throughout time with people and birds in myth and storytelling throughout time. And what do you think it is about birds that calls to so many people?
So a lot of it, I put back onto falconry. Falconry is the oldest recorded sport in the world, or art. We also consider it an art.
Yeah.
And I just try to picture like the original person that thought like, I'm going to go work with a hawk.
Yeah.
I mean, think about they're out there, you know, trying to hunt a rabbit or something to feed their family. And, you know, they throw an addle out, or they shoot a bow, or throw a rock. I don't know, whatever. And they miss.
Yeah.
Right. They go hungry that day. But lo and behold, they see this red-tailed hawk fly down and grab that rabbit and take off. Like, okay, we're putting two and two together. So why not go out, trap a red-tailed hawk, train them to work with us as a partner, and build this partnership? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it goes back to that. At some point, somewhere in history, somewhere in time, somebody had to see that connection and start it. Mm-hmm. Because falconry has been dated back, you know, even before Mesopotamia. Mm-hmm. So I think there's this fascination birds for so many different things, as well as, you know, the hunting birds, of course. It's very extreme, but also like a parrot, absolutely gorgeous. Right? Think about the Aztecs and the Mayans used a lot of parrot feathers, birds of paradise, right, for decoration. So I think that humans have always had a fascination with birds because we're a mammal. We see mammals, we get close to a lot of mammals, and many mammals are very big, right? Birds tend to be, in comparison to a lot of mammals, much smaller. So it's this also neat fascination of, this is an animal for the most part, not all birds, but they can fly. Mm-hmm. This is super cool. There's only one mammal that can truly fly, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just been ingrained in us forever for most humans that yeah. birds are just fascinating because they are so different than we are and can do things that we can't.
That's very similar to the reflections I have. And I think that fascinating is the word that always feels so resonant when it comes mm-hmm. to birds with me as well. So the fact that you said that,
yeah,
I totally agree. They're fascinating and they expand our possibility.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, birds are all around us. I even think, you know, biomimicry is one of the programs that we teach. Mm. And, you know, something like the airplane or the jet, you know, been designed off of
yep.
birds. Mm-hmm. So they've mm-hmm. helped us advance our own technology as well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think people forget about, you know, we gain a lot of ideas from nature for technology and architecture. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nature is constantly inspiring us in our mind and our ideas and our mm-hmm. evolution. It's expanding us yes. constantly.
Yep.
Constantly.
It's exciting. It's fun to watch.
It is fun to watch. Mm-hmm. And so to you, education is so critical,
of course.
Yes. And I would love to hear from you, why is education so necessary, and especially right now?
Education is huge. And I have been doing formal education programs in schools now for over 20 years. It's sad to watch the level of science education decline. Mm. Now, I could go into a school years ago and all the kids knew what a red-tailed hawk was. I can go into a school now and we don't know if it's a hawk, a falcon, an owl, or a chicken. Mm. And I'm not to say that that's everybody, right? But, yeah. but this is the decline that we've seen actively. And so in order for us to actually make a conservation message get through to people, no matter what age they are, kids, adults, doesn't matter, people have to have some kind of inspiration to do it, right? So my whole goal is to go in and make sure that everyone understands why these birds are important, why we need to protect them, why any of us here should care, and how we can help them. So we sat down and came up with some idea. Okay, what is something that someone can actually participate in actively right here, right now? Okay, don't spit your gum out on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. Very easy. Everybody can fix that one. Birds see the gum as a little barrier, fruit that they can come down and eat. You know, we're not letting cats roaming around free, right? And I'm not talking about barn cats. I always want to make sure we understand. I'm talking about cats running around free throughout neighborhoods and killing things. So if we don't teach people these things, they're never going to know it. Nobody's mm-hmm. going to sit there and I'm going to look up how I can protect a bald eagle. Like, people just don't think that way, right? It's more of, wow, today I went to the Wild Birds Unlimited store and I got to meet Juno, the bald eagle. Mm-hmm. And I learned how important it is to make sure that I don't throw food out of my car window because food lands on the side of the road and attracts prey animals into the road, which is what's attracting birds like eagles into the road. Wow, that's an easy thing that I can fix and do. So right there, we have helped hopefully make a difference for at least one animal. Mm-hmm. And seeing an actual live ambassador has way more impact than seeing a video or a picture. And that's been proven time and time again. So it is incredibly important for us to be allowed and be able to continue bringing these animal ambassadors into classrooms, into libraries, into parks, into festivals, mm-hmm. so people make that connection. We do a lot of Renaissance festivals. People always, you know, where's the bird show? Mm-hmm. You know, because it's exciting. People want to learn something new. And when they feel like they've made a connection and they feel like hopefully they've learned something new, they're going to want to protect that.
Yeah, definitely. I love what you spoke to. I mean, I love so many things that you spoke to, but particularly about connection. And one thing when I used to work at the Santa Barbara Zoo that I would often use as my own organizational north was what we connect with, we protect.
Yep.
What we connect with, we advocate for. And so finding the ways to facilitate connection between human and animals, which I believe is inherently there. Mm-hmm. We are communal, connected beings, and that's beyond humans.
Yes, absolutely.
And so providing that opportunity, it's like an ignition. It's like turning on a switch of remembrance coursing through your body.
Yep. And he says with any animals, I mean, think about dogs. You know, we use dogs as a comparison a lot because that's an animal that has been domesticated. It's been an mm-hmm. animal that's been around humans for many, many, many years. And we make that connection to them, right? you know, you can't keep a hawk as a pet. Of course, we would never want that to happen. Mm-hmm. But we can have these amazing ambassadors come in and still make a connection with people, even though they're not taking the animal home. And even mm-hmm. though it's not a domesticated animal, mm-hmm. you know, seeing these guys up close and making that connection, whether it's an animal that you have at your home or not, it's still exciting. It's
oh my God.
It's still, yeah, you go to the zoo. Like I went to Santa Barbara Zoo a few years ago and saw the condors there and they have mm-hmm. beautiful enclosure. I was like, oh, this is so amazing. Like, it'd be so cool to be able to take out a condor and teach with, of course, that are few mm-hmm. and far between. But even, you know, as a bird educator, you know, I've got so many different species. It's still exciting to go visit other bird programs. It's yeah. still amazing to see other bird shows and bird presentations because it never gets old.
No.
Right? I might learn something new that I haven't heard from them before. And we do mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. It's so cool. And so we have that. I mean, like you said, it's just this connection that just people have. You just mm-hmm. have it. Mm-hmm. Right? We mm-hmm. all do, even though people are like, I'm not an animal person. You are. Mm-hmm. And you're an animal.
Don't so believe like, it.
You know, get over it.
Yeah. Right? So you have done so many education programs with children and adults. And like you said, there's this palpable shift when people experience animals and that connection. And is there one story? I mean, I'm sure there's many, but like a particular time that stands out where you're like, wow, that was truly an impactful experience.
I have so many.
But yeah, I know.
I'll pick one. So years ago, I had done a program at a school mm-hmm. called Talent Talk, right? So we bring four raptors in, you know, birds of prey, and do a presentation on, you know, habitats, adaptations, their personal stories, things like that, right? And I was standing in line at the grocery store one day, you know, and it's always weird for kids when they see like a teacher at the grocery store because teachers just live at the school, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it, we all believe that. We're
you
know, like, oh.
And they're like 100 years old, or, you know.
What is happening here? This is strange. You know, so the kids get all excited when they see somebody, right? So I was standing in the grocery store. This kid was standing in front of me kind of doing this like side-eye thing, looking. And he finally turned around and said, you're the bird lady. And I was like, well, I guess that's better than, you know, being like the crazy cat person or well, squirrel lady. I don't know, whatever. I was like, yeah, I do have a lot of birds. You know, how do you know that? He said, oh, you came to my school last week and you brought birds. Oh, do you remember what birds? And he said, what birds we brought? And then this kid went on and on and on about every fact about every bird. I was like, hey, we got to go. We're in line. And this kid was just fascinating, just giving off all these facts that like real obscure facts that, you know, most kids don't remember. Most adults don't ever remember. Mm-hmm. Right. And I asked him, I said, why is this so important that you know all this information? He said, mm-hmm. well, it's important because now I can go teach kids just like me. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. Mm. But what made it better was the mom said to him, I'm like, take the bags over to the car. The kid was mentally challenged. Mm-hmm. And his mom said that since that presentation, that was the spark. Mm. So she's like, he does all his homework now and he does all his research and he's obsessed with birds and now wants to grow up and be an ornithologist. I was like,
oh my God.
Right. It was so cute. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh. Like we made that child, and we're talking like third grade, like a very young child, right?
Yeah.
Our presentation was so inspirational that this kid who had zero interest in school before completely mm-hmm. changed. Mm-hmm. So not only is he now excited about birds, he's excited to learn because you have to study hard to be an ornithologist.
Yeah.
You got to go to school. Right. Wow. Mm-hmm. That was super epic. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's it. I mean, if that doesn't speak to people about why these animals are so important,
exactly,
we got a problem.
Exactly. And I'm sure that's just like you said, one of many stories of these animals and you being the bridge and amplification of their voice and why it's necessary, why it's so potent.
Yep. Well, and even, you know, taking care of these guys at our facility, it's a lot of work, right? And this is a very stressful, emotional job.
I'm sure.
Because yes, we get to work with incredible birds, but we have to clean up poop mm-hmm. every day. We do that every single day. We're disinfecting enclosures every single day, right? So it's a lot of work and it's very mentally, physically, and emotionally exhausting.
Yeah.
But the thing that I tell my staff, my interns, my volunteers, any team member I have, that fun part is going back and working with these guys, right? And doing the presentations, getting them trained to do demos, getting them trained to sit on the glove, getting them to build that confidence with us so that they're not afraid of us. Because a bird's not just going to sit on our hand immediately, right? It takes time for them to go through that. And the moment that they figure it out and you see the light bulb, it's like, oh, yes, so exciting, right? Or the moment the bird does their first flight to your glove, like, oh, yes, great. It's like, I imagine, I don't have kids, so I imagine it'd be like your kid walking for the first time. You're like, they're doing it, and I helped. This is so cool. But what we have to remember is these birds did not choose to be in human care.
Yeah.
They didn't choose that. She didn't choose that. Mm-hmm. That bald eagle that we just got didn't choose that. Prairie falcons we have other didn't choose that. We made that choice for them. So it is our responsibility as caretakers to give them the best possible life that they can. So even if we're having a bad day, sometimes it's good, just even for us, to go in and sit in a bird enclosure and just hang out. You know, I've gone in before and like read children's stories.
Yeah.
For the birds. You know, to get birds, you know, used to us, things like that. We play music. Mm-hmm. We play a lot of Legend of Zelda. Zelda. Mm-hmm. We love it here. You know, so we play music to him. So we're, you know, we'll sing. It's funny. And he doesn't know I know this, but we have an eighth grade intern right now who really wants to grow up and be an exotics veterinarian. So I'm like, yeah, kids, let's go. Yeah,
let's do it.
Heck yeah, we need you guys. So he's here learning husbandry of birds. Fantastic. His parents are super supportive. We love this family. And I logged into one of the cameras the other day because I was checking on a bird that we're watching for behavior. And I saw him in there cleaning in her enclosure. And he, there's no music playing, but man, he was just rocking out. And he's just singing away to this bird and cleaning poop off the ground and just having a grand old time. I'm like, this is epic. This is the best. I should.
This is everything.
It was so amazing. He's just, hey, what do you think about this song? And just, you know, belting it out there is amazing. So it's fun because we also make that connection with our team members, make connections with certain birds too, which is really cool. But I mean, even if we're having a bad day, whatever, these guys make it better.
Yeah.
Right.
They make everything better. I mean, they make the Safeway parking lot better. You know,
yes. Oh my God, red tail hawk over the, oh,
like chasing through the parking lot to see a, you know, red tailed hawk.
Yep.
I
get excited about the little sparrows, which I know are invasive, but I still think they're absolutely adorable. I'm like, look at them eating the little french fries. They're so cute.
Yeah. And again, it's not their fault they're invasive.
Nope.
You know, so to separate or ostracize them because of this label we give them is an unfortunate thing, I believe.
Absolutely.
So I'd like to go back to talking about storytelling a bit. Yeah. And to me, humans are storytellers. Yes. We've told stories throughout time, and it's story is a way that we create a bubble of truth.
Yep.
That we live within. And it can be, it can be freeing. It can also be confining in a lot of ways. I think a really critical part of your work is rewriting stories about birds and certain species, and particularly, and I'm sure there's others, but one example is the vulture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to share a little bit. We were touring the facility and Devin goes, is it okay if I let these two out? And I'm kind of like, what is happening? I can't wait to see what this is. And she opens the door and these two little floor-bound, black-shrouded, gremlin-like figures come bounding out and wiggling and bouncing. And it's these two bouncy black vultures. And it might be one of the best things I've ever seen, how they were running around so playfully and expressively. It was just incredible. And I would love to hear your thoughts on what I've spoken to, which is the necessity of rewriting stories.
And I'm so glad you brought up the vultures because they're the ones that kind of get, you know, ew, vulture, they're ugly. Mm-hmm. And people don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
So many times we've gone out and taught programs with our vultures and we'll have people come up to us afterwards like, wow, I had no idea. They're so cute. They're absolutely adorable. Look at that behavior. That's so funny. Look at their cute little face. Like, yeah. Yes. You know, the black vultures especially, they're my favorite. I love the turkey vultures, don't get me wrong, but I love black vultures. I think they're adorable. And as you saw, their behaviors are hilarious.
Oh, so funny.
They bounce They you know, do their little thing, and they do their baby wings. Mm-hmm. You know, the turkey vultures we have are adorable, similar, you know, but they're more stoic. They're very stoic, you know, and our turkey vulture, when he does the same behavior, kind of sneaks along. Mm-hmm. So he's more like, you know, creeping along. Mm-hmm. So it's different when you see the two of them, the two species walking around together. It's hilarious. But we recently have discovered that in a couple areas, a couple states, black vultures are now huntable. Mm. You can hunt them. And there are billboards along the highway now about it is okay to shoot these birds that are killing livestock and blah, 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 blah. And it's tough because it's one of those where, okay, well, we take our black vultures to this area to do presentations.
Yeah.
And I was so afraid taking them that people were going to be upset. It was actually the opposite. And we presented them in a way, of course, that it's humorous, but also educational because, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm bouncing out, you know, through behind the stage and they bounce around through the audience and they fly overhead and people love it. They absolutely love it. And as funny as this is, we have all these t-shirt designs from over the years, owls and parrots and eagles and everything. The number one selling shirt we have is the black vulture.
Really?
Hilarious, right? I love it.
It's so good.
That's the number one shirt that we sell that everybody loves. But we had to kind of change how we present the vultures. Because, you know, we were just talking about, oh, you know, they're mostly a scavenger. We say mostly for a reason. Mm-hmm. Turkey vultures are scavengers. Black vultures will still sometimes kill prey. Mm-hmm. And will they kill livestock? Yes. It's been proven. Yes. And so before, we would never really talk about that because we didn't want people to be like, oh, automatically, boom, we don't like this bird anymore because it could kill somebody's calf, right? Well, we've actually started integrating it into the presentations we do, especially in the area where they're shootable now. And we've found that we actually get a greater respect from mm-hmm. audience members when we do talk about the taboo conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Will this bird come down and eat a newborn calf? Yes, they could. They absolutely could. Here's why. Okay. Mm-hmm. The bird is hungry. All right. And, you know, that new calf is struggling. It's got smells on it, might have blood on it from just being born. Mm-hmm. So we can't, you know, fault the bird for doing what they do naturally. That's their job in the ecosystem. So we can't get upset. And we have had so many people afterward come up, and I've never thought about it this way before. I've never mm-hmm. thought about how these birds help us.
Yeah.
And we have had people just get so excited with the information that we bring about these birds now. And we start talking about these taboo things that before we kind of just kept quiet. And now like, hey, it's out there. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Total shift in audiences, which mm-hmm. I super appreciate.
Definitely.
But people also see how silly they are and how funny they are and how intelligent they mm-hmm. are. We would talk about the black vultures too. Those two black vultures can do the same puzzles that our corvids and parrots do
mm-hmm.
and usually faster, which is kind of
amazing.
Yeah. The amazing mm-hmm. thing about it. And so we've brought puzzles to programs and stuff to have the vultures do.
Yeah.
Have people watch. And then it's this, oh, this isn't a gross, scary, mm-hmm. nasty. Oh, they don't smell. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're super, super clean. So we try to rewrite the story in that so many times, you know, in Hollywood, they're seen as a gross, disgusting, scary, death bird, right? Mm-hmm. Well, but watch these two play around and do a puzzle in front of you guys. Yeah. Like, you're going to have a different mindset after that. And it is. It's working.
Yeah, I love that you're rewriting that. And this rampance of pigeonholing species or beings or any human into this narrow scope is so detrimental.
Yes.
And so deepening the story
is
really helping to break down the false story.
Yes.
And so I love that you are bringing these holistic beings. They are whole beings mm-hmm. with a whole life. Yep. And when people see that, I think we are also inherently compassionate as we are inherently connected. And so the moment we are given that opportunity to see the wholeness, you know, it changes everything.
It's exciting.
Yeah. So you talk about learning the bird's personal stories. Mm-hmm. And I loved that when I read that on your about on the website. Why is it essential that we get to know the birds on a personal level?
Great question. Every single bird, just like humans, just like dogs, mm-hmm. just like horses, have a personality,
mm-hmm.
right? We have multiple kestrels. We have multiple red-tailed hawks. We have multiple Harris hawks, multiple vultures. Mm-hmm. Each one is completely different. So this bird might like this, but this one doesn't. This bird might like to fly to Renaissance Fair, but this one won't, right? So every bird has a personality, and we want to be able to demonstrate the bird's history, their story, mm-hmm. to the audience. You know, imagine a third grade class, and we bring four birds in. There are a lot of education programs that don't use birds' names. Mm-hmm. And I understand, you know, we want them to learn that this is not a pet. We want them to learn the species. That's fine. We use the birds' names. Mm-hmm. All right, everybody, this is Boreas, the Swainson's hawk. Mm-hmm. You know, and we'll announce that, or we will say Swainson's hawk, Swainson's hawk, Swainson's hawk through the presentation. And at the end, somebody asks, what's his name? His name's Boreas. We're not going to keep it a secret, mm-hmm. right? We do bird, you know, symbolic adoptions. We got birds' names on t-shirts, things like that, mm-hmm. right? When people learn the story, let's say of the turkey vulture that we have, for example, sashimi. They learn, first of all, sashimi, adorable name.
It's right? so good.
We have sushi and sashimi.
It's so good.
It's adorable. And people remember that. Mm-hmm. Remember, I met that turkey vulture named sashimi. They'll remember that name. And they're also going to remember, hopefully, the bird's story. Why do we have this bird? Oh, he was illegally taken from his nest as a chick. Somebody thought it would be really cool to have a turkey vulture as a pet, realized that that was illegal, relinquished the bird, you know, to a rehab facility. Bird wasn't releasable, so it was sent to us to be an educational ambassador for their species now. When we hear the bird's personal stories, I feel like there's more of a connection. Just like with people, you know, we love to learn each other's stories, right? Yeah. We're a social species, you mm-hmm. know. Vultures are social species, so that's pretty cool, right?
That's so cool.
I love that about vultures. But it's really neat because then that third grade class might remember, oh, their red-tailed hawk was hit by a car, possibly because he was chasing a mouse or a rat into the road that possibly could have been eating a banana peel that somebody threw out, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know the full story, but that's a connection that we can make. Hey, we might be able to protect another red-tailed hawk or a great horned owl by making sure that we don't throw anything out the window. Hey, do you remember that story about Ares, the red-tailed hawk who has a damaged wing, who unfortunately can't go back to the wild because he was hit by a car? Let's make sure that that doesn't happen to any other birds. Kind of pulls at the heartstrings a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know, we hear these stories of these individuals and see the different personalities, see the different behaviors and things when we go into classrooms and libraries and events. And I feel like people make more of that connection when they hear, oh, this is what happened. How can I prevent this from happening again?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Super important.
That's so important. And I think it goes back to the meaning of connection that we talked about too, that what we connect with, we protect. And mm-hmm. often what we relate to, we connect with as well. So seeing that relatability and understanding that every being is unique and individual, just like us.
Absolutely. You know, a bird that has a crooked leg or a mm-hmm. bird that's blind in one eye or a bird that's missing a wing, you know, we've had audience members with similar ailments.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. It makes a connection like, I am just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I feel more inclined to protect other birds to mm-hmm. make sure that this doesn't happen.
So I know that every bird has a unique personality. But if you had to give us a few examples of some like quirky characteristics of some of your birds, what are some standouts?
Oh, this is my favorite. I can talk about this forever.
Yes.
Okay. So one of my favorites, Boreas, our Swainson's hawk.
Mm-hmm.
He has this obsession with rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And so for years, we finally had to take it out because he was like actually obsessing over it. We had this little platform that we would feed him on. It was a milk crate. But we used to have that daisy doormat, like AstroTurf stuff on the top of it, right? It's all crunchy. Every single day, every morning, first thing, sunlight comes up, he's like, oh, I'm busy. And he would get collect rocks, certain rocks, and push them into the rows of the AstroTurf. Like, mm-hmm. that's what he would do. Mm-hmm. Which was really cute until we were like, okay, this is literally an obsession now.
Yeah.
He wouldn't go out and do programs and stuff with us because he was so obsessed with his rocks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a process. Mm-hmm. So we changed that out and gave him other toys and things that now he has. Like, he has stuffed animals that he carries around. Like, those are his babies, which that's not a big deal because he's not, you know, getting down and getting in the dirt and stuff like that. He is one of our flight show stars.
Mm-hmm.
And his trained behavior is to fly on command from behind a curtain or behind mm-hmm. a wall, wherever we are. And he'll make a big loop over the audience, big loop,
and then fly right in front of people and then bank up and land on a perch, mm-hmm. right? He does it perfectly every single time. Mm-hmm. Well, but if anything changes, he won't do it. He won't fly at all.
Oh.
And there was one day that I was there doing the show alone. You know, I was like, okay, and now Boreas. And our swains to talk. Boreas. Nothing. Would not fly. I was like, okay, hold on a minute. Went back. And he's just standing there looking at me like, uh-uh, not at all. I had to look. Like, what is it that he's, you know what? Someone left the mop bucket out. So we can't fly because there's a mop bucket. I had to talk. Okay, hold on, guys. There's a mop bucket. So this was great. The audience loved it. I had to roll the mop bucket back outside and shut the door. And then he flew. And it was fine. We were all perfectly fine. Oh, you know, goodness. We have Tater Tot.
Yes, I was hoping you'd talk about Tater Tot. If you weren't, I was going to ask.
Yes. The most spoiled little American kestrel in the entire world. And I know this is a safety thing. And I know other falconers and educators are like, I can't believe she does this. I'm sorry. This is how it works. He will not ride in a bird kennel.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. He will not do it. And if we do have to put him in a kennel, he will thrash and thrash and thrash in there and has broken feathers. He's tipped talons before and then they'll start bleeding. So he just, and we've tried every kind of kennel you could possibly imagine. So he has a special car perch that buckles through the seatbelt so it doesn't go anywhere. And he has to ride out on his special, and he's tethered, you know, so he's not going to go anywhere or anything, but he just sits there on his car perch and then he'll jump up onto the center console and watch himself in my phone in his, you know, reflection, because he's very handsome and he knows it. So he makes his own little videos.
He's very handsome.
He, you know, so now we're to the point where the coffee shop knows Tater Tot. Is Tater Tot here? He absolutely, of course he is. He absolutely is right here. Where else would he be? You know, and then they always ask, and it's like another time, can he have a milk bone? Like, he's not a dog. Have we not learned this now, ladies, over the past 5 years that he's come through? But no, he cannot have a milk bone.
I can't wait for the day they just, they're randomly like, can he have a quail? And they just like start stalking it for Tater Tot.
I would love that. It'd be amazing. Pup cup, Kestrel cup.
Yeah.
So yeah, each of these birds has their own quirks, their own funny little personalities, and it's a lot of fun to learn.
Yeah.
There are a lot of programs, educators and falconers who will not work with imprinted birds because human imprinted birds are completely different than parent reared or, you know, birds that are, you know, raised by their parents. They understand, they act like a normal bird, right? Mm. The behaviors are normal. And I say normal.
Yeah.
The behaviors are normal. The sounds are normal. I really like the human imprinted birds because it's a challenge to figure out what those sounds and behaviors actually mean. So I adore imprints. I know not everybody does, but as you saw, most of our team is human imprints. And so it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. What is that process of trust building like between you and the birds?
Great question. Depends on the bird.
Yeah.
So for a human imprint, trust happens almost immediately because they're a person or we're a bird, right? So they associate that with us. So getting a human imprinted bird to learn to sit on the glove sometimes only takes a matter of minutes.
Oh, wow.
You know, we made fun, like our black vultures, we say, well, that took dozens of seconds to train, right? Because they're just like, we love people because we are people. This is amazing. So they want to be with us and they want to do what we're doing.
Mm.
So like you saw too, we'd like to let them out when we're, you know, working in the barn. They get to run around and, you know, because they're not going to get into trouble or anything. They just hang out with us, right?
Yeah.
But the birds that were raised by their parents, a little bit different, right? We're a predator as well. It is not normal for a raptor to sit on another predator's body.
Yeah.
Right. So we go through what we call a manning process. We do it differently with different birds because, of course, different personalities, but also different species. An owl doesn't learn the same way that a falcon does.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to take natural behaviors into consideration. With our owls, all of our owls are human imprints, but with the ones that I've had that aren't, totally different training process. So typically what I would do with them is I go in and I sit in the enclosure and I just talk. So we're cleaning or pretending to clean if there's nothing to clean and just talking, or, you know, we'll play music and, you know, read a book, whatever. So they get used to our presence going in and out of the enclosure, and then we show them that we're the ones providing the meal. Mm-hmm. We're not scary. We're walking refrigerators. This is amazing, mm-hmm. right? And then, you know, we put their equipment on. We get them used to sitting with the equipment, because that's weird also, putting anklets on, you know, little bracelets. Yeah. They're like, oh, takes a little bit of time to get used to that. Then we'll start the manning process of stepping up. That's right. Stepping up onto the glove. Some birds immediately figure it out and are like, oh. Some birds, it takes a little bit of time. Yeah. And they'll do something called baiting, which is where they jump off the glove. Like they're going after bait. Mm. They see something they want to go to, or they're trying to get away from you, right? And mm-hmm. sometimes people see that and they get scared that the bird's hurting their legs or something. Mm. If these birds had fragile legs, we wouldn't have birds today.
True. Okay?
I always use the equivalent of, think about a Harris hawk who's going out catching a jackrabbit. Jackrabbits can run 45 miles an hour.
True.
When that bird hits them, and it's not like tag, and you just fall over, right? Yeah. There's a process, okay? So if they had weak legs, coming in and grabbing a jackrabbit, mm-hmm. not going to happen. They're not going to survive.
Yeah.
So very strong legs. We use very soft equipment. Everything is built specifically for that bird and that bird's behavior and potentially handicap, mm-hmm. depending on what it is, right? But the manning process is super, super important. You know, there's a big movement right now of not having equipment on certain birds. Mm. We do not support that movement. Okay. I will put that out there. We use the equipment as a safety measure. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily always for training. Do we use equipment for training sometimes? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? We train our caracara and our vultures with target sticks, mm-hmm. and then transition them over to just the end of the stick, and then we just use our hands as a mm-hmm. signal, right? So we do use equipment. We use jesses. We use anklets. For some of our more high-strung birds, when we're first training, we do use hoods. Mm-hmm. The hood doesn't hurt. It's like blinders on a horse.
Yeah.
Everything scary goes away. Yeah. We can't use hoods on vultures and owls, of course. It doesn't really work. But,
no.
You know, brand new bald eagle getting transferred from a rehab facility to ours. Yeah, in the crate, that's scary. So we use the hood. We transition them off the hood at some point, of course. But
absolutely.
Equipment is very, you know, important for safety. And, of course, it's sometimes training as well.
Yeah, and for kindness is what I'm hearing too. That transition is stressful. And if we have the ability to mitigate their stress,
yes,
why not do that?
Why wouldn't we?
Yeah, why wouldn't we? Yeah. So speaking about vultures and corvids and how they're so intelligent, I mean, they're puzzle solvers, tool users, they recognize themselves in reflections. Yep. I saw recently that magpies are known to hold funerals for members of their flock. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. It's like this whole procession where if a member of their flock dies, about 30 or 40 will fly in and surround the member and call for 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and then all fly away in complete silence at the same time.
So, that's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
See, you learn something new every day.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Magpies are incredible. They're cool birds.
They're amazing. They're amazing. So with that in mind and all this talk we've been doing about rewriting story, let's talk a little bit about the phrase bird brain and how that has been used as an insult and that we need to change and rewrite that.
Yes. Bird brain is one of those, I think a lot of people think that birds are not intelligent just because of the way that they interact. And so many times we will associate with chickens, mm-hmm. right? I've had chickens for years. Chickens also can be target trained. Mm-hmm. We had a chicken that we trained on our hand, just like a raptor.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh my goodness.
You know, it's great. They can do puzzles, things like that too.
Oh, yeah.
But people have this idea that birds aren't intelligent. Now, are there some birds that are more intelligent mm-hmm. than others? Absolutely. I believe, mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong, birds with the highest IQ level are African gray parrots. Mm-hmm. They're incredibly intelligent and can learn hundreds of words, maybe more now. I don't even know.
Yeah.
Who knows now? Everything's
their language is evolving. Yeah.
Yes. When we watch behaviors being trained for somebody like a macaw or Zazu the crow or mm-hmm. Mayhem the raven, those birds are going to learn behaviors differently than others. It doesn't mean that they're any smarter than anybody else. It means that they're going to learn different behaviors.
Yeah.
Highly, highly intelligent birds we typically see as social. Mm. You think about primates. Mm-hmm. Most, if not all, primates are social. Elephants, social. Pigs, social. Dolphins, social, mm-hmm. right? We see those social behaviors And the way that these birds or other animals are doing these behaviors is a more intelligent thing. So we are going to compare ourselves to these animals. Mm-hmm. And when people compare themselves to a bird, okay, well, birds can't do this and birds can't do that, but dogs can and cats can, right? So we're comparing unfairly. We can't compare them to mammals. No. It's just different.
Absolutely. Right? And that not there's not one way to be intelligent. No. And that needs to be relearned as well. And that are humans intelligent? Yes. We're also not the pinnacle.
Exactly.
For intelligence.
Yes. I mean, even with dogs, we always like to compare to dogs, right?
Yep.
Domesticated animal, been with humans for many, many years. Mm-hmm. Not every Labrador is going to learn how to sit in 5 minutes.
No.
Just like all humans learn things differently. It doesn't mean one human is more intelligent than the other. We just all do things differently.
There's room for everybody as they are.
Yes.
And I think that's an important bridge to talk about in conservation as well, which we slightly addressed prior to recording this, is how every action matters. Mm-hmm. Everything anybody does with good intent for the planet has a place and can make an impact. And so when people show up as they are and are passionate and loving towards something, like the student you met who loves birds, mm-hmm. that makes a difference.
Yes. You know, I have one other story I'd love to share.
Please.
That's, you know, was very touching. A few years ago, we were at a festival. I don't remember what festival, it was somewhere up in Denver. And maybe a week after the festival, I got a letter in the mail that had cash in it, which is always kind of interesting. You know, we never want to send cash to the mail, I understand, but there's a $20 bill in there. And I opened it up and there was this handwritten letter, and it was a dad, single dad, who said, you know, I brought my daughter to see your presentation, whatever festival event we were at. And it was so touching for us. We've never thought about birds before. Mm. And we are living on food stamps. You know, it's a very rough time in our life. Life is a very emotional letter. It was very sweet.
Yeah.
And so I asked my daughter, we spend $20 once a week to go out to a fast food place of her choice. And this week was supposed to be McDonald's. And she actually said, I would rather send my $20 to the bird group.
Oh my God.
So he sent us this $20 bill. And instead of taking her out to her special dinner for the week, they sent it to the birds.
Wow.
How special is that? If we get people like that, right?
Yeah.
That is what makes a difference.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That little moment of we made a connection with whichever birds we had at that festival. Mm-hmm. Epic. Yep. Right? That's what we need. We need people to actually start caring.
Yep.
But if we can hopefully help that one bird, you know, that one plant, the boreal toad. I was on the toad survey team here for a few years. Everybody's like, a toad? Ew. I'm like, no, you don't understand. You know, they're an indicator species. Like, all the megafauna gets a lot of attention, and not so much the little guys like the birds and snakes and spiders and things like that that are also extremely important.
Yes.
Yes.
One bird, one toad, one snake, one child who asked her parents to donate to the birds, that one child you impacted her parents.
Yep.
How many people when she grows up, how many generations forward? And that's how it starts, because it's a ripple effect. Yep. It ripples out. And so I think my last question is, you know, we talk about this excitement around animals, and we also talked about really this ecological grief that so many people experience when they do care. And sometimes that makes that caring hard to sustain.
Yes.
What are some insights you have on maintaining hope?
We actually talk about this in our staff meetings because there's a big burnout, right, in the animal and environmental science fields. And seeing all the things that the world is going through right now, it's depressing.
Mm-hmm.
So there are little sparks of hope. I love to talk about the peregrine falcon and the bald eagle. I mean, man, look at that. That's thanks to hunters who are like, man, we can't lose these birds. So let's do something about it. And man, they did, right? Mm-hmm. So there's just these little sparks of hope in that. I love doing programs. I love going out and doing the flight shows because I love when people get that that look of awe is what gets me every time where they see an owl fly right in front of them or a parrot fly right over top of them. Right. And it's that experience where maybe this individual has never had the chance to see an owl up close. Has never had the chance to see a parrot up close. So we're making a difference for that one person. And the smiles alone, or the big eyes, and the, I want to get a picture of this bird. Or, you know, when you have people are like, can I take a picture next to sashimi? I'm like, yes, please. Absolutely, you can, right? I'm so pumped that you love the turkey vulture out of all the birds you saw today, right? It's exciting. So that helps us, you know, and we take turns. The staff will take turns rotating where you're on animal care and do a program on animal care program day so that we don't get burnt out on things too.
Yeah.
But the hope also for us is almost like for us putting blinders on, where sometimes, yeah, the world is scary, right? And it does get very frustrating and exhausting. But for us also, when we train a bird to do a new behavior, or we train a brand new bird like that bald eagle to sit on the glove, that's exciting.
I love that. That's what the things we talk about too that keep us going are awe and coming back to a space of curiosity and the joy that is on, that is present on the planet as well.
Yep. Not everything's bad.
No, no. And having the sovereignty to choose the story too.
Yes.
And I think that a big thing to remember as well is the empowerment that we can make a difference.
Yep.
Where there has been some time where we have felt disempowered that difference is possible.
Yeah.
Or disempowered that we are a part of something, and to feel empowered that we are of this planet, we are connected, and we make a difference.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, we could just talk forever.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, we basically have been today. Yes. It's been glorious. But I just want to say thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for your patience with birds and humans. Thank you for your devotion. Thank you for all the lives that you're changing, avian and human, and
absolutely,
for the planet.
Oh, well, thanks for starting this. I mean, and getting people excited about it. You know, I hope a lot of people start watching and learning about birds and feeling a greater appreciation for them. I mean, that's what we're here to do. So
that's what we're here to do. Thanks. And, you know, I just, one last little snippet I got to share. I was on my way here and my mom lives in Oregon. So I was like, oh, I'm going to give her a call. I got a lot of time. And she was like, what birds are you most excited to see? And I was like, you know, I think I'm most excited to see the black vultures.
Yes.
And so then you opened the door and they ran out and I was just like, I can't wait to call my mom and be like, I saw the black vultures. Let me tell you all about them.
And had a great vulture experience.
Yes. Yes. So thank you, Devin. You know what? Actually, last thing, where can people find your work, follow along, website, all the good stuff?
Yeah, thank you. Natureseducators.org is our website. So education programs, of course, you know, please reach out. We do virtual programs and things too. Internationally, we've done international virtual programs,
amazing,
things like that. We also give programs in English and in Spanish. All the programs can be done in both, which is super fun. And then I also have Mile High Falcons is my personal program where I have different education birds. I talk specifically about the sport of falconry, the art of falconry. We have social media. I'm the worst millennial in the world, so I'm not like a social media person. I have Facebook. Nature's Ed has Instagram. We have all of our public presentations listed on our events page.
I can't wait to come to more events and see a flight show. I'm so excited about that. So thank you, Devin. Thank you, Zelda. I might ask you to be my next podcast guest, you know, just you and me, Zelda.
Does that sound pretty good?
Yep. Oh, and thank you to all you listeners, the bird lovers, the bird curious. And we can't wait to tune in with you next for our next topic.
And there you have it. This has been The Curious Bird. Thank you to our guests, our editor, Joe Escanos, and to you, our audience, for your time, curiosity, and openness. If you'd like to see these conversations continue, we would greatly appreciate your consideration in donating to our nonprofit, which you can do at the link in the episode information. Your generosity helps keep the conversations and our work flowing. To the bird lovers, the bird curious, the heart-centered, and any and every listener, until next time. When we meet again to build bridges, heal from separation, remember interconnectedness, and hear from the real inspired voices that are creating change in service to coexistence.